Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
You are listening to Nerd at Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I am Greta Johnson.
And I'm Tricia Bobita, and we're here with our friend Peter Sagal.
I feel that in tribute to this week's episode, on this episode of the podcast, we should say sincere things about how much we appreciate each other.
Oh.
So that next week,
we
everybody is sad that we die.
Oh.
What do you think?
Where did you get that idea?
Oh, I don't know. I just thought it might be dramatically effective.
Is it effective, though? I guess we'll get to it. So we are talking about Season 8, Episode 2. It is called Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And before we even start our conversation...
Knight, for the record.
Knight. That's Knight. True. That's a good point.
Knigget, I believe. Knigget. The appropriate old English pronunciation.
Let's listen to this montage that our producer, Justin, so adeptly made this morning, and then we'll start chatting.
It's going to be safer down in the crypt, you know.
When the time comes, you'll be down in the crypts. They're the safest place to be.
We'll put you in the crypt where it's safest.
No.
You'll be safer in the crypt. These things will fight.
I'll be safe down in the crypt.
It's just when you put them all together.
It's amazing.
Isn't that great?
I just wanted to shout, don't you listen to our podcast?
Oh,
Tricia was on to this weeks ago.
Sure.
Weeks ago. She was telling you don't
goodness.
Go in the crypt.
Okay, so what I'm thinking for this week is first we talk about sort of like the basic ins and outs of this episode, what happened, what we think about it, questions we may have, and then I'm thinking second half we can talk about who seems most likely to die after those conversations that we heard throughout the episode.
I have thoughts about that whole question, but I'll get to them
all right.
In my usual fashion.
So is this this episode takes place in like not even 24 hours.
Right. Well... I mean, the clock starts sort of when Tormund, et cetera, get there, and they say they'll be here before dawn.
Yes.
And so it's so maybe like 8 hours from that moment, maybe, and who knows how many hours prior to it.
And it starts with Jamie basically
yes.
having walked in
yeah.
to go,
yes.
hey, everybody.
I'm Jamie.
Remember me?
You know, last week.
I did a lot of bad stuff to all of you.
Last
but
week.
But I'm sorry and more brown haired now than
yes.
I was before.
Because in my travels, I lost my peroxide. I last week I said, oh my God, it never occurred to me. Jamie Lannister was going to Winterfell where Bran is. And
yeah.
I was like, oh God. And then it never occurred to me, oh my God, he's going to Winterfell where Dany, daughter of the man he
uh-huh.
killed, famously, it's in his name,
yep.
is hanging out. And I'm like, oh, I'm dumb. But there they were. Now, I guess the first question is, did you buy Danny's forgiveness of him when you started with that, I grew up on stories of how awful you were and what we were going to do to you when we found you?
Oh, I don't think she forgives him, but she was outflanked by the Warden of the North.
Quite literally, they were on either side of her.
The Lady of Winterfell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know, though. I mean, it's also like those stories that she was told were by people who are also horrible, right?
True. It's
you
not
know,
like
to
her
what extent?
Is it's not like her brother. She didn't have her relationship with her brother anything like they had with Ned Stark. It wasn't
right.
like she thought her brother was a
yeah.
virtuous
she
man.
Was right. never protected by being a Targaryen. Like that didn't
right.
help her at all until she got those dragons.
That's true.
You know,
and also she knows her father was a pretty awful father. She's commented upon that in
yeah.
In
well, and then even later
mad.
On in the crypt, she talks about how bummed she was that her bro
yeah.
raped Lyanna. You
yeah.
know, I mean,
yeah.
like she, I don't know. She
yeah.
doesn't have a whole lot of data points that indicate that.
Well, yeah,
she should
she
be allegiant to her family.
She knows.
You know?
Well, on the other hand, she's been trying. Her, she says later on to Sansa, she's been spending her entire life trying to reclaim her family birthright of the Iron Throne. But on the other hand, as we know, she knows her father was a murderous lunatic. So. One thing I noticed about that scene is that you can talk about it in terms of plot, like, oh, does she really accept his what's the word, his apology or his...
His non-apology.
His non-apology. Yeah, he says, you want me to apologize, I won't do it, he says. But not, of course, for killing the king, but for killing the various Starks. but what was interesting was that scene set the tone for the entire episode in a different way in that... First, Brienne stands up and says,
yeah.
let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you how I feel about this man. And then Sansa says, let me tell you how I feel about Brienne. Each time going over what these characters have done for each other.
Yeah.
The transitive property of loyalty.
Right. But not only that, it's the first of many times in this episode where characters reveal that, among other things, they've been watching Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because they, I mean, one of the things about this TV series is that we see things happening and we form judgments upon these things because the thing, what does Brienne really think of Jaime? And doesn't Brienne have loyalty toward Jaime? Or what does Sansa think of Brienne because of what? Well, now they've been thinking about those things too.
Well, and I think another example of that is when Tyrion asks Jaime if he thinks that Cersei really is pregnant.
Right.
You know, like that was another one where it was like, oh,
and
they're just totally like sitting in for the audience.
Exactly.
You know?
And another, I mean, we talked about this last week when almost at the very beginning of the episode, Bran said, oh, the Night King has broken through the wall. He's got one of your dragons. And very shortly after that, we find out that Cersei isn't really coming with her army. In the beginning of this episode, Jaime revealed the only other surprise that was really hanging out there. Mm-hmm. Cersei has gotten this army of sellswords, 20,000, and there's enough of them to take care of all of us, whoever us survive.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking of this phrase that comes from, of all things, game theory, which is called perfect information.
Yeah.
Chess is a perfect information game. Both sides know exactly what's going on. There's no secrets. And we're at that point.
Yes.
Nobody,
yes.
We, the audience, with a couple of exceptions, don't know anything that the characters don't know, including their own histories, which is one of the reasons why I think the episode, and here I might surprise people, I thought was so great.
I really liked it too. But then again, one of my favorite TV writers is Aaron Sorkin, who is flawed in many ways, but I love very dearly. And he always gets guff for the resume recitation that characters do in that show, where, you know, you meet a character and they'll do sort of their whole backstory really quickly and sort of a lot of fast dialogue. We had a lot of that this season. Remember when you did this and I did this and you did this and then I saw you over here? And But it also was very human. It was
right.
I think when you're waiting to die, you have slightly awkward conversations and you reminisce.
You do.
I think
quite
lengthily,
you know. I mean,
and then you'd sing a song.
Although around the fire, there were six of them, so they could have been playing catchphrase or charades or something.
Yeah,
like that's
even
teams.
Number.
Would have been great
yeah.
if they played that game with the name of a character on their foreheads and they had to guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm Aegon the Conqueror. Right. Anyway.
I also
how do you
liked
mime a
it.
Wedding except for like drink died like
right.
every wedding in charades
in fact,
in Game of Thrones.
There was a line.
With this,
I didn't quite hear what he said, but there was actually a line when Beric Dondarrion walked up on the Hound and Arya, who were having their moment, one of like 400 moments like this that happened. He said, what the hell is this? A effing wedding?
I think he said a bloody wedding.
A bloody wedding.
The Hound,
which, of course,
the Hound
is even more reticent.
It's like a wedding.
It's like a wedding. It's like we're all showing up and like hanging out. And it's exactly what it was. They were all gathering together to have moments.
I liked it, but I did. It was so weird to be that emotionally manipulated by this show, I thought. You know?
Manipulated or satisfied, Ms. Johnson?
I think it's. Some of it felt a little saccharine to me.
Like what?
Well, like the applause after knighting Brienne.
That was interesting.
You know, like just moments like that, that were just like this world is not this kind usually, you know?
But again, when somebody's on their deathbed and they're all looking at each other as if every single one of them is on their deathbed, you get much kinder in that moment.
Yeah. And you know, I have argued, I've said in the past, I hate fan servicing. I've said, you know, it's terrible when the showrunners know why you like these characters and they overdo it, like the whole Tormund, you know, making eyes at Brienne thing, they've overdone that. And yet at the same time, all of my objections fell away because I thought that it was so earned. To take perhaps the best example, Brienne being knighted by Jaime.
Oh, yeah.
In the name of the warrior, I charge you to be brave. In the name of the Father, I charge you to be just. In the name of the Mother, I charge you to defend the innocent. Arise, Brienne of Tarth, a knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
That was, I have not been as moved by an episode of TV since Leslie Knope got elected to the city council, which made me weep, ladies and gentlemen. because you just have – because let's face it, we watch the show because we like the characters for the most part, or we hate them if they're Ramsay. And we like them for very specific reasons because they are so whole as people. It's one of the great appeals of this show. They're not just – they seem like real people. And we know this real person – I'm making little air quotes – Brienne, and we know, because we've watched her for 8 years, that the thing that she most wants in this world is A, to be a knight, and B, to be respected by Jaime Lannister, and she gets both, and it was amazingly powerful.
Yeah, it's a huge, I mean, I also think that performance from end to end from her was fantastic. The conversation with Sansa at the beginning to the on the battlefield, like, why aren't you making fun of me?
Yes.
I loved that.
We haven't had a conversation, longest conversation we've ever had without you insulting me, which is a little self-aware, but I get the point. And but to me, there were two amazing moments with Brienne and Pod, which I watched and saw for the second time, and they both happen in that sequence. The first time is when she says, when Jaime's come up with the idea, like, oh, we can make you a knight. And rather, they say, well, why aren't you a knight? And she says, I never really wanted to be a knight. And she looks at Pod. And Pod, who I don't think has any other lines of dialogue in the whole scene, in the whole show, just looks at her and says,
come on.
I know you're lying. Come on.
Yeah. And we then, talk about this by the campfire.
Exactly. And then later on, there was a much more beautiful moment where they're saying, all right, I'm going to knight you right now. And she's like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. And he looks at her and he gives the most imperceptible nod.
Yeah.
Like,
it was really beautiful.
Go ahead. It's okay.
I want to go back to that first scene when Jaime shows up and Brienne stands up for him. Did either of you notice how, like, Cersei-ish Sansa's outfits
were? Oh, my God. That armor was amazing.
Right?
Why isn't there a scene? They have so many scenes of all the blacksmiths making weapons. Where is the scene of the costume shop?
I said the exact same thing last night, Peter, because who is making all of these coats for the Unsullied, too? Yes, like, where is this happening?
They all have, like, where did Varys get his winter robes?
Yeah.
You know, that still look like his summer robes, but they're wool.
What are they, Amazon Priming all the clothes?
Exactly.
Like, what is happening? Like,
sometime between last episode and this episode, somebody made Sansa a kind of suit of armor.
It looks awesome.
It looks great, but where is she getting these things?
Well, from the pilot forward, we know that she can make really beautiful clothing on her own.
Really?
That's true.
You think she's taking her spare time hammering grommets?
But that was like embroidering.
Yeah, that was true.
But my concern is who is outfitting these very cold armies of the southern lands.
I don't know if either of you, probably Trisha, has done any research on this, but for some time now, Sansa has been wearing this necklace, which is a chain going through a circle, and it's the one constant in all of her costume changes. And I assume it has some meaning, but I have no idea what it is.
Interesting.
Maybe the
internet
knows.
To Google that.
Trisha will look into that. She'll have answers for us next week. Okay, so speaking of perfect information, one question I had for you two was. So we have that scene, the first scene with Arya and Gendry in the forge, in the blacksmith land. And she tells him she knows death. And she throws those knives. And Gendry's like, oh, shit.
Badass.
This chick knows how to kill people for real.
Right.
So speaking of perfect information, like, is that still seems to be something that not everyone gets.
Fair.
Right?
Like, do you think?
Only Sansa knows that she can change faces.
Yeah.
Right. Only Sansa. Well, even Sansa sort of knows that.
Right.
Because Arya told her, but she.
And she saw the faces in the bag.
Nobody's
right?
seen it.
Yeah.
But let's see.
And even talking to Jon when she talks about her sword, you know, like
she made, once or
she's
twice.
Made a lot of like cute jokes to her older siblings about how
once or
she's
twice,
like.
She's used the sword.
Yeah.
She's
kind,
a
you
psychopathic.
Know, but yeah,
assassin,
I think the extent to which
she
can
had that fight, that fight. Sparring match, whatever you want
That's
to call it,
true.
With Brienne. And everybody
That's
who
true.
Saw it is like, what the hey? So I don't think anybody
That's
doubts that she can handle herself. There's been, you know, conversation about that. I think Arya is in trouble to anyone who gets in her way. Well, it won't be me, said the Hound. So I think people get that Arya has skills.
But that's still different than being a faceless man.
That's true.
Yeah, I just wonder if that's going to end
but
up.
But we have to keep that secret because there's got to be at least one more face swap in the show.
You think so? You think there's going to be a Mission,
there's
gonna be
a
Mission Impossible type moment where you think somebody has survived, like maybe Cersei is triumphant, and then Cersei reaches up and pulls off her face, and it's really Arya.
I think
that
Jaime dies, that Arya steals Jaime's face, and that we have a moment where we're not sure whether Arya or Jaime killed Cersei.
Yes.
Because
I think
half of us are going to be rooting for one thing, and half of us will be rooting for the other, and then we'll either see the face rip off or not.
It makes sense, given all the things we know about the characters and what they want.
And it would be a good way to sneak back into King's Landing.
It would be. Although, one of the things I keep coming back
Cersei's to... Cersei's pissed at Jaime.
In the back...
True.
True. One of the things I keep coming back to in the back of my... Or maybe she disguises herself as Bronn. Who knows? But Bronn is dead. Oh, no. Don't let that happen. One of the things I keep thinking about when we're all thinking about next week, which is the big battle, the one we've been hearing about for the entire promotional preseason, there's going to be three more episodes of this TV show after that, and I have absolutely no idea how they're going to fill that time.
Yeah.
I have no clue about what... I mean, I could easily see the battle and then an episode of the aftermath of the battle. Three episodes? I don't know how they're going to fill the time. There are things coming that I can't anticipate.
Well, and one thing I was tempted to also make a montage of were all the clips in this episode of people saying we're going to die.
Yes, which is something...
it was just everybody said we're going to die.
Which is something,
die,
Greta, you pointed out last season in the last episode. Was, am I going to die? We're all going to die? And if there's one thing about this episode that struck me most powerfully, it's about death. Both death in their world and death in our world and death on TV shows.
Yeah.
Because do you want to play a patriarchy jingle now just to preempt it?
Because no, keep going.
Okay,
we'll withhold judgment. We're feeling benevolent this morning.
Like I said, we're all you know expressing
yes.
Brienne like our actual feelings, and then when we die next week, you'll all feel bad. Here's the thing. So I thought a lot about a couple of things. For example, our habit going back years now of gaming out who's going to die.
Yeah.
And when we do that, when we talk about who's going to die in this TV show, one of the things we're doing is we're saying who's going to deserve death, who needs to die. I've said that. I've said Jorah needs to die. Right.
Yeah. I mean, also who's played out their storyline.
Right. I mean, I remember quoting like Harrison Ford talking about Han.
Thank you, Peter.
Solo. Correcting that myself for all the nerds who wrote
good
it.
Good job.
Han, not Han, who marries...
Liza with a Z, not Lisa with an S.
Exactly.
Lisa with an S goes,
remember, I was quoting him talking about, well, Han Solo has to die because...
Yeah, because he did his stuff.
He did his stuff.
He's done.
So that's how we think about death in TV shows and movies. Who deserves it? For whom is it the appropriate ending? For whom is it an unjust ending? Well, one of the things I thought that they did was they took all of that off the table.
Yeah.
They just swiped all the pieces onto the floor because they gave every single character a kind of resolution, right? Everybody got a moment. To take the most important one and the most moving one, Brienne got what she wanted.
Yeah.
Jorah got what he wanted. He got honor back in the form of that sword. They reunited. They connected, all of them. With the possible exception of Jon and Dany, is the only tension left.
Yeah.
Dany and Sansa
a little bit. But even they, I mean, they had that moment that, as I think Glenn Weldon of NPR put it, failed the Bechdel test so badly that they have to retake the class.
Oh, God.
But nonetheless, so everybody... has resolved. So that means that we can no longer say, well, for example, Brienne needs a noble death, or we can't say Jaime needs a noble death, because they've all done what they needed to do. They've all arrived at a place of peace. So that means that I can't tell you who's going to die anymore. And I think that's intentional on their part.
I think some characters resolved much more strongly than others.
Yeah.
And I think we should save it for the second half of this damn podcast.
All right.
And we should get through a couple of other significant plot points and questions and theories.
Right. Go on.
Jaime did apologize to Bran.
Yes, he did.
At the tree.
And not only did he apologize, but he said something which got repeated a number of times. I'm not the man who I was then.
Yes.
And Bran says, well, neither am I. And if you hadn't, or rather, I think the thing he says is, if you hadn't thrown me out the window, you'd still be that man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so there was so much open, I can't think of another example like this. You know, to take the classic.
Look at my personal growth.
Exactly.
Look at it.
Does Han Solo at the end of Star Wars say, well, you know, I've learned to really value loyalty and virtue over my greed?
Uh-huh.
He doesn't say that. He just does it.
Yes.
And all of these characters almost all of them had those conversations. As Tyrion says, he raises his glass and says, here's to self-betterment.
Yeah.
And that's
the perils of self-betterment.
The perils of self-betterment.
Which shall be my new toast line.
Exactly.
Always and forever.
And that, to me, again, was like an amazingly, I thought it was bizarrely effective that you had these characters going, yeah, we know. We've been watching the show, too.
Mm-hmm.
We know, because we've been living it as fictional characters, how we've all changed. And we can see it, too. Tyrion isn't the, you know, whoring drunk that he used to be. Jaime Lannister isn't the amoral egotist that he, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they know it.
I have to say, I loved, there was a lot of kindness in that episode, but like Tyrion is inching his way back towards being Tyrion.
Yes.
I think he has not had his moment of cleverness to save the day. Like he has not had his resolution.
Right. Yes. Right.
Dany a little bit because of Jorah said like, yeah, 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 go hide in the crypts. Which are safe.
Well, what? Go on, but finish your thought.
But basically, he, like, you know, he's the only one smart enough to sit down and talk to the Three-Eyed Raven.
Right.
Like, oh, you know everything?
And what
I would like to talk to
and
you.
And we don't know exactly what he learned. I'm just
right. Exactly. I don't know what he learned
about him, that, actually.
He was now talking to Jaime. The scene with Bran ended with, we don't know what he learned from Bran. Maybe he learned something interesting.
I think we do know, actually.
What?
So Tyrion is super fatalistic until he talks to the Three-Eyed Raven. And after that, he says that thing when they're all sitting around where he's like, actually, I think we're going to live.
Did he say that?
Yeah, he does say that.
It's strange, isn't it? Almost everyone here has fought the Starks at one time or another. And here we are in their castle, ready to defend it. Together.
At least we'll die with honor.
I think we might live. I do.
Yeah, and then he lists off Jaime and Davos and Brienne's creds, and that's when he accidentally calls her Sir Brienne,
right.
And that was becomes
the
knighthood
scene.
But
he's got information. Because there are...
Yeah, I think he did. He must have. I mean, he said numerous times before talking with Bran that we're all going to die at Winterfell. This is all horrible. And then, like, all of us... It seemed to me like a pretty striking change of heart.
We all... I said earlier that they had perfect information.
I thought he was just drunk, but that's a good point.
Yeah. That we knew everything that there was to know, that we knew what they knew, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. There are two exceptions. The first is we know that they shouldn't go into the crypt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out of the point where you're like, you're almost yelling at these guys, come on, what's in a crypt?
You know what? We actually have a voicemail that says pretty much exactly that. Let's listen to it. This is Sarah.
I just think that if I was hiding from an undead army and was fully aware that my enemy does in fact raise the dead, I would not hide in a crypt. Just saying.
And again, the fact that she knows that we knew that Trisha predicted it 2 weeks ago before the season even started, you start to wonder what's wrong with these people. Why can't they figure it out?
Are we meant to think that, I mean, it's also like the show has been very kind to all the characters for the first two episodes. Lots of hugging, lots of reunions, lots of... And I was game for it. I was up for it. But that is not Game of Thrones
in
its entirety.
But
so possibly the first thing or one of the things we see next week in this battle is all the women and children being slaughtered by whites that have just risen from the dead.
It's possible.
And just like, boom.
Boom. Although...
Well, but they'd have to get into the crypt to be able to do that, right? Like, can they...
No. The
dead
risen,
in the crypt.
The risen in the crypt.
The lids in the graves start rising and the dead people, including, headless Ned Stark. I really don't want to see that. It would be terrible if, like, next week there's an interview with Sean Bean about how he kept his undead cameo a secret. I don't want to know about it.
Don't they have to be in proximity, though, for the...
The Night King can just raise his hands. Remember at
Okay.
He just raises his arms and they all stand up.
Who knows what the range limitation is on his resurrection?
Yeah, but he doesn't have to touch him or anything. He can just do it because they're near.
I thought of something just a moment ago. You were talking about how Tyrion hasn't had his redemptive moment
yet. His cleverness moment.
People have said, forgive him. I thought that got a little heavy. There were two moments where people said to Tyrion, your mind, we value your mind.
Yeah.
Forgiving him for his screw-ups all last season. There was the other moment that I thought was too written was Samwell's weird speech about narrative.
Oh, yeah. I actually pulled that so that we could listen to it again.
But the one thing that you said, Trisha, that triggered something in me is you said, well, Tyrion hasn't had his moment. Where is he going? He's going to the crypts. So when the dead do rise from the crypt, which is like, 99% at this point, the only person there to defend them is going to be Tyrion and his mind.
He's at the wall right now.
Yeah, but remember, that whole conversation. He said, he said, Davos, you and I will be in the wall. I'm like, no, you won't be. You, Tyrion, because I love your mind and you're amazing.
You're going to the bunker.
And I'm
going to
need you.
Who knows?
He's going to the crypt. And that's where I think if he's going to have that redemptive moment to make up for his screw-ups all the last, I don't know, 8 episodes.
Or do he and Bran have some sort of fake-out plan?
Well, that's the other thing. Perfect information except for the fact they can't figure out that the dead are down there and are going to rise. And also, they know some stuff they didn't tell us. Like, where are the dragons?
Right.
Which did not get mentioned
I think that was the other thing that stressed me out about this episode was that there was a lot of time for them to sit around and talk about how they were going to die, and there wasn't a whole lot of time spent on actual strategery. I mean, there was that one scene in the Situation Room. That was my concern.
Matt Iglesias, who I think is usually very funny and smart and charming about Game of Thrones, especially when he does economic analysis.
He's on Vox, right?
He's on Vox now, yeah. He used to do this for Slate. He criticized them. Why are they spending so much time like connecting as human beings and not like planning like their battle? I think the implication is they have.
Right.
Because there are a lot of references, like there's that shot of they've built this weird collapsing bridge over presumably a moat of fire. Mm-hmm. So they've made these maps, and you know, Brienne says, I've got the left flank. So they've been making plans.
That's
and
true.
I think in fact they've made plans that they haven't told us about.
Okay.
That there are surprises in store for us from the good guys. The dragons will appear at a strange moment, or they'll lay a trap or something that will happen in the course of the battle to give it a sudden change of direction. Uh-huh.
There's a quick line in the, we're looking at the map board,
yeah,
where they reference that the dragons can't be there because then they'd be too far from Bran.
Right, which struck me as weird.
And it also made it very clear to me that Jon and Dany will be riding a dragon each during the battle.
There was a shot at the very end when just before we have that final shot of Tyrion looking out and then the very final shot of all the White Walkers lined up where Jon looked at Dany and there was a nod and they said, okay.
To the dragons.
Pretty much.
Yeah. To the dragons.
I also think, though, that in the inside of the episode, they talked about wanting to give us at least some of that so that we would know what was supposed to happen in the battle.
Right.
Right? Like showing us the moat, showing us the like defensive weapons, telling us what the plan was supposed to be so that we have some expectation. And it's like, otherwise it's 120 minutes of people swinging swords.
Right.
And so they're running around.
And we can start talking, and I hope we do, about other battle movies.
In our spinoff podcast, Other Battle Movies.
Well, because here's the thing.
Internet recaps other battle movies with Peter Sagal.
Exactly. So there was a bunch of – I want to – before we move on to that, though, I want to reference something that they also discussed in the that map room.
The Situation Room.
Thank you. As well we should. Where they came up with their plan. Well, we can't beat the army, but you know what might work is if we kill the Night King – okay, how do we kill the Night King? We lure him to Bran.
Yes, let's listen to Bran explaining the Night King's motivations for coming after him.
He'll come for me. He's tried before, many times, with many three-eyed ravens.
Why? What does he want?
An endless night. He wants to erase this world, and I am its memory.
Well, that's what death is, isn't it? Forgetting. Being forgotten. If we forget where we've been and what we've done, we're not men anymore, just animals.
Your memories don't come from books. Your stories aren't just stories. If I wanted to erase the world of men, I'd start with you.
I'm sorry, a whole bunch of things there. First of all, Trisha?
Yes.
You've been asking with a degree of sympathy, what does the Night King want?
Are you satisfied?
The question was asked and answered.
No,
exactly.
It was not asked and answered.
A long night.
No. That is not an answer that is satisfying.
You're still going to walk up to the spaceship waving the flag, and somebody just told you, no, they're here to kill us, Trisha.
Yeah.
You still think that there's some sort of...
I think they want to kill everyone that they is in the way of something they want, but I don't think what they want
is
just
annihilation.
Is uninteresting.
They just said so. Yeah.
Then I'm bored.
How much did you feel like Sam was a stand-in for Benioff and Weiss, who are 4 episodes away from being done, having created this story that people really care about, but that we will ultimately forget?
Samwell is, of course, a stand-in for George R. R. Martin and Trisha Bobita and me and every other nerd who grew up reading this stuff. I don't know if it stands for Benioff and Weiss.
I don't know. It just seemed to me like the writers and their concern for like creating this thing that is so close to being over.
I have no
idea. They got
idea.
A Star Wars franchise. They're not feeling that nostalgic. I think part of why these episodes are so condensed is that like they had other stuff they wanted to do.
Really?
I think HBO would have let them go another season.
Oh, absolutely. But they had to bring this to a close. I didn't get that speech. It seemed like his point was, yes, you're right, Bran.
That's he's also in front of everybody saying,
you know everything.
Bran, you are correct about all things.
That's
you
true.
Are a source of fact, not right. fiction, because yeah. he knows what has to happen next.
So, but the other thing I wanted to ask about in terms of that whole scene is they come up with this plan. All right, what we'll do is we'll fight off the dead as long as we can. But in the meantime, we will lure the Night King to you, Bran, because Bran assumes the Night King is going to come for him personally rather mm-hmm. than sending his minions. And once he does that, we will kill the Night King, presumably with dragons. And that's that line. It says, no, the dragons can't be away from Bran. And I didn't know if he was indicating, well, that's been the plan all along. The dragons will protect Bran. But they must have been thinking about what to do with the dragons. Because on the one hand, the dragons could take care of the Army of the Dead pretty quickly, yeah. ending all their problems. But on the other hand, there's an evil dragon, an ice dragon out there. And
we're going to have a dog fight in the air.
I know. And
oh,
I bet we
be
will.
Great.
And they also know, because they've seen it, Dan and Dan. So I keep calling her Dan and Jory. I guess I'm shipping them. John and Danny, they've seen the Ice King kill a dragon
right.
pretty easily. So
yeah.
they know the Ice King, they can't get close to the Night King with mm-hmm. their dress. And they must
like
have
it.
Been thinking about
well,
all
and,
this stuff.
And anyone with one of those ice javelins basically could
yeah.
potentially take down a dragon.
Right. But presumably, so, I'm guessing that since we've only seen the Night King do it, they're assuming that the Night King is the threat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they must have put that into their thinking. We can't just fly out with dragons because the Night King will kill the dragons and raise them and then we're all screwed.
Right. Yeah,
I have
I don't know.
Three other things I want to ask you guys about before we talk about predictions.
Okay.
Of course, we can talk about more things than that. But we saw Ghost. I feel like that's noteworthy.
I know. Just for like, what, 2 seconds?
Yep. But he's there.
He's there. It's like the people have been asking for Ghost
yep.
for a long time. Well,
people
there he is.
People were asking.
Just hanging out there, obviously CGI'd into the shot, but there he is.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
going,
that's fine.
Oh, I'm Ghost.
Do you guys think that Tormund really drank the breast milk of a giant?
That was
as
the...
A tenure.
All right. So he's telling that story.
Is it true?
And then he's telling that story, which is a great, funny Tormund story.
Oh, so
and then he drinks
weird.
Like he drinks the milk or whatever is in, and it's milk of some kind.
And
I'm like,
the
is
slurping.
Tormund Giantsbane doing prop humor?
Because really,
did he say, "I got a great gag to play"? Here, somebody give me some milk. This is going to be great.
I really found that the least fun moment of the episode.
Yeah,
because,
I did not like it
because it was silly to me. Because like. Wine and ale are a scarce resource in
right.
this moment. So why on the night when you should be getting very drunk because you're about to die, would you let that much of it go into your beard and not your mouth?
Well,
like Tormund is a practical
ale,
man.
Wasn't it milk?
I don't know. It was
it
some
milky to me.
Frothy beverage.
It looked milky to me.
What's that
none
Star
of which
Wars
was
milk?
Making it
oh,
into his
gosh,
face.
The stuff from the Sirens or the Sirens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a weird moment because
oh,
I was
God.
Like, no, this is you don't let good beverage go to waste.
That was very strange.
Somebody else tweeted. They were like, why was nobody taking that beautiful bread that was clearly there for the taking next to all the soup that Davos was giving out there.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
That was a great
did you
tweet.
See,
oh,
actually,
that was
it was weirdly enough, it was T-Pain who apparently...
Yes, it was T-Pain.
Oh,
who apparently
God.
Is a big Game
I
of Thrones live tweeter.
Yeah.
And he screams, says, why aren't they taking all the bread to dip in the soup? And the HBO official
yes,
account
this
responded,
is what I saw.
Now I can't think about anything else.
Oh my God,
that was pretty
that's
funny.
Amazing. I love it.
Can I say one more thing about the whole... until I don't know if this is the right time. I've been thinking about battle movies.
Oh yeah. Oh good. We're going back.
We're
to
going
the battle
back
movies.
To that. So
nobody cares, but it never really stops him. His feet are still fucking talking.
There was in the pre-publicity, which was mostly in Entertainment Weekly, they talked about how the battle we're going to see next week is the longest battle committed to film, even longer than the longest one to this point, which is the Battle of Helm's Deep in the Two Towers. Right?
Like it literally took the longest to film.
Right.
55 consecutive
right.
nights.
So it's either the most elaborate production or the most, I don't know what it ends up being, the time on screen, time to produce, whatever it is. So they're talking about the Battle of Helm's Deep. Well, if they're talking about the Battle of Helm's Deep, then they're also probably talking about Peter Jackson's inspiration for the Battle of Helm's Deep, which is a movie called Zulu, which I went and watched when I read an interview with Peter Jackson talking about how that was his inspiration.
Did you do this a couple, I feel like I've heard you say this before.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. At this point, we've been doing this. Everything I'm saying,
it's
you've
like,
heard me say before.
I know it's been 2 years.
That probably gets a jingle.
Conversation.
All right. Do it. Anyway.
I like that you just talk over them now.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was. Are you going to play it or not? I'll wait. If you're going to
add in post.
No, it's
all right. Put it in post. All right. So here's the thing. As I might have said before... In the
you
movie,
most certainly have.
In the movie Zulu, which is this really great movie, you can get over the inherent racism and colonialism.
Oh.
Basically, the way it works is there's this outpost of British soldiers. There's no opening battle. There's nothing like, you know, the D-Day invasion at the start of Saving Private Ryan to show you how violent it's going to get. No, somebody shows up and says, we've just seen the Zulus and they're coming to kill you all. And then you spend an hour before the first shot is fired just getting to know these people. Who are they? What are their relationships? What are they like? So when the battle comes, you actually have feel stakes. That's what Peter Jackson did for the Battle of Helm's Deep. There's like a 25-minute sequence of just going around and meeting the people who are stuck in this fortress waiting for the attack. And that's what this, I think, this episode was, with the huge difference that these are characters we already know. We don't have to be introduced.
Right.
But we want to spend time with them. We want to see what they've accomplished. We want to see how they've grown. We want acknowledged how they've grown. So now we know that the people who are going into that battle next week and might die aren't just, you know, game pieces in the great Game of Thrones. They are real people who have gotten someplace in their lives and have something to lose.
I think in a lot of things that are committed to film like this too, they might sort of within the battle go back and forth between those moments or flashbacks or something and the battle at hand. I think that we're going to see some pretty pure uninterrupted battle next week because we, like you just said, got rid of all this sort of you know, plot and dialogue tension. It's done. We might just see a whole lot of people die somewhat unceremoniously
exactly.
next week.
Exactly.
Do we know?
Just chop down
that's
one
exactly
by one.
That's exactly right.
Do we know how long next week's episode is?
It's like, more like 120,
yeah,
I think.
I read
an hour
like,
and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I just did the math. If we were to start filming a 55-night battle today, we would be done on June 16th.
Wow.
Just
well, we better get started.
Fun fact. Yeah.
Yeah.
More of Nerd at Recaps Game of Thrones in just a second.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Hacia, whose Executive Fellows Program provides Black and Latinx business owners with real-world tools and strategies needed to master fundamental management concepts related to company stability and growth. Registrants learn through one-on-one executive coaching sessions with subject matter experts in the areas of finance, business development, operations, and legal. More info at haciaworks.org.
Hey, this is Greta. We're going to get back to me kind of complaining about this week's episode in just a second. But first, I wanted to let you know that Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal is made by WBEZ, which is a nonprofit public radio station. The majority of our funding comes from listeners just like you, which is why we are inviting you to take part in our spring fundraising drive. We've got a bunch of awesome Nerdette swag that can be yours, including a really gorgeous Nerdette Recaps tote bag. It's got the names of all these badass ladies who are on Game of Thrones, and then me and Trisha and Peter, and then it says cute patriarchy jingle. It is awesome. I bet you want it. You can get it at wbez.org/nerdalert. Thanks for your support. I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about John and Danny because John told Danny.
Yes, he did.
About his real life parentage.
Yes.
And she responded much the way he did, which was to sort of forget the fact that they banged and to just focus on the throne.
That was weird because the first thing I would have thought is like, oh my God, you're my nephew. I feel gross if I were her.
Right.
But she would have potentially been forced to marry a sibling anyway because she's a Targaryen.
Yeah. But nonetheless, she'd probably mention it to the guy she was banging. It's like, oh my God, you're my nephew.
Well, and I think it like the question it makes me ask is whether they really do love each other. You know?
Oh,
if
they
that
don't.
Love goes, like, if, you know, because it doesn't, there's nothing about like the emotional aspect of like, maybe this is weird that we love each other and we're related. It's just like, oh, you're supposed to be in charge.
Maybe, you know.
Because they said they loved each other.
I mean,
at least Daenerys said she loved Jon to Sansa.
But everything Daenerys said to Sansa was political and conniving.
Right.
Like, Dany doesn't have real emotions.
She's not capable of them.
You don't think so?
No. I've never seen her. I've never believed anything that I was meant to believe that character was doing. But also, like, it means that she, like, because the one person who was supposed to care for her and keep her safe, who she ever really got to interact with, her brother, was such a monster.
He was the worst.
And I just rewatched the first chunk of season one of the show and reminded myself how awful Viserys is.
Ooh.
And, like, that's her only point of understanding of, like, what family is.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't think she really loves anybody. And also, she loves the idea of power more than she loves anybody.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
this
the person who she feels
of,
softest towards is Jorah, who's just, like, unwavering, like, who loves her. And
right.
so
it's convenient for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although it occurs to me, it turns out that I was not alone in thinking that there's no sexual or emotional chemistry between those two characters.
Yeah.
It turns out the internet quite agrees with me.
Yes, it does.
And makes the same points, which is like both these actors have managed to depict that and with other characters, and it seemed convincing. Maybe that's part of the plan, so that when they're the rift between them, which we're being pointed at, the only sort of tension between characters that remains as we go into the battle, maybe when that rift explodes, we won't be going, oh, but I thought they loved each other.
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, those guys did not really have feelings for each other.
Also, even in the world of this show, they've only known each other for a hot minute. Like, Brienne and Jaime were on the road together for a long time.
Yeah.
Tyrion and Jorah were, like, on that boat together for a long time. Like, those relationships were built out of experience. Dany and John have banged a few times and spent, like, a week and a half together, right? Like, how much time has really passed?
Right.
We only know they banged once, too.
It's true. And they
did the
makeout by the waterfall.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just know they had sex one time and they kissed one time.
You were like unshipping them.
Based on what I've seen.
Speaking of shipping,
yes,
are we going to talk about...
Yes, we do need to discuss Arya and Gendry. Yeah. Wow.
Whoa.
Pacing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they're just going to go for it.
Yeah. Did it seem abrupt to you? Because I think there were two scenes between Arya and Gendry before the consummation scene.
I didn't think it was abrupt. I also liked that it was kind of very unromantic. It was just Arya being like, we're probably going to die tomorrow. Hop to it. Here we go.
Pretty much.
Yeah, especially when she's like, you need to take off your own pants.
Yeah.
Take off your own bloody pants.
I'm not going to take off your pants for you.
First of all, I cannot be the only person who was just skeeved out by the whole thing. And it's totally unreasonable, except it's reasonable because we met this actress when she was 12.
Right.
Yeah.
And even though this actress is now, what, I guess?
22. Her birthday was last week.
She's 22 years old. She is a full-ass grown adult. And her character is, if not quite that old, certainly 18 or 20.
And HBO knew everybody was going to be freaking out, so they tweeted, she's 18, she's 18. It wasn't the exact text of the tweet, but they were like, she's 18, she's of age.
Even though we all know, we've watched her, literally watched her grow up, right? It's still, you know, all I can say, it's like, but where's the little girl, you know?
I mean, it
was very skeevy. However, the one thing I noted about it, that weird conversation that she has, well, how many women have you slept with?
Yeah.
And it almost read as like she's being jealous, which is weird.
I think she was just making sure he had skills.
Right. In the end, I think it reminded me of nothing so much as Villanelle in Killing Eve.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because we've talked about the fact that Arya is kind of a psychopath.
Yeah.
For good reason.
Yeah, she seemed a little crazy in that.
She's been traumatized out of like human feelings.
She has a couple of lists. One is a kill list.
Yes, exactly.
This is a different list.
Fuck list, marry list, kill list.
In the same way that Villanelle in Killing Eve is sometimes like, oh, I understand you human beings sometimes engage in this activity. You find it pleasurable. Mm-hmm. I wonder what that's like. I think that's closer to what Arya was doing rather than anything like, I've loved you my whole life.
She hadn't been pining for him. Yeah,
no,
totally.
Exactly right.
Also, the fact that he slept with three people does not indicate any level of skill.
True.
Let's be clear.
True.
Somebody's reaction to that was when there's the shot of them sort of like afterwards and he's asleep and her eyes are open and she's sort of staring into the distance.
That's it? That's all there is?
Man. And also somebody was like, should have gone with Podrick.
Oh, that's
who knew?
Amazing.
She didn't know.
Not perfect information.
Yeah, I know.
If there
exactly.
had been perfect
she
information,
really
she would have been fucking Podrick.
Exactly. If she'd really watched the all of Game of Thrones, she would have picked up on that.
Oh, that's such a delightful note. So I'm kind of sad to go from that to who's going to die, but I think it's time.
Okay.
My argument is, I know, Peter, that you thought that everything was wrapped up pretty tightly.
Well,
I don't think, to me, that episode was about Jaime. And, like, his complete shift from being an asshole who fucked his sister and pushed Bran out the window to the guy who comes back to Winterfell and apologizes to Bran and knights Brienne. Like, I think he has fulfilled his arc as someone who used to be a dick and now is a good person and therefore must die.
That was the most powerful example of that, especially because of that great scene with Brienne. And by the way, was that the first time we've seen Gwendolyn Christie smile in this entire TV series?
Oh, probably.
It might have been. I've seen
her welling up without crying.
She was
just
great.
Threaded
and,
the
you know,
needle.
It's funny because I was like, oh, I've seen her smile. No, I've seen her smile in like publicity shots.
Yeah.
And,
or, right,
you know,
right.
But never on the show. That was the most significant one, but there were other ones like it. For example, when the Hound says to Arya, I fought for you.
Yes, that one was nice too.
When Jorah says to Dany, I was so bitter and jealous when you named Tyrion your hand because I saw myself as your closest advisor. But yet let me tell you that that is right because he is smart and wise and he will serve you. And the show was filled with moments like that.
It was filled with moments, but I think like that episode to me was it was about Jamie showing up at Winterfell.
And of course, the title of the episode came from that scene, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So yeah, it's the primary one, but not the only one.
Yeah.
And thus, I say all of the characters have reached that, if not to the same emotional power, the same kind of resolution in their, if you will, journeys. And so they're all equally vulnerable to being killed by a white at this point.
I think they're all going to die?
I think Lil Mormont dies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she was like, I'm going to the front. And it was like, okay, bye.
Oh, that
but she's so great.
She's had so many badass moments. I know, we all love her. But perhaps her most badass moment was...
She will die in a blaze of glory.
Well, her most badass moment was saying, we're done here. That was so cool.
We're done.
But yeah, she probably is going to die. How about that little kid with the scar on her face?
The Shireen stand-in.
That was almost a resolution for Davos, because Davos, of course, is haunted by Shireen's death, and he meets this girl, and of course, it's not the same, but he can. It's almost as like, here's another girl for you to care about. Here's a reminder. It served that purpose of bringing him some closure. Everybody has closure, meaning they all could die.
Davos also keeps talking about how old he is, which I think is troubling.
In like, all my years.
Yeah, he did that again in that scene. He was like, yep, I made it this far.
But as you say, Greta, everybody says something to that effect. We're all going to die here. We're all going to die.
It does, but so often in this show, I mean, so often if someone says something, the inverse is actually true, right? I mean, like, you think about Grey Worm and Missandei, like, making plans for the future.
He definitely dies.
Yeah. I don't know. And we should talk about that moment, which was, like, because I mentioned, you know,
hashtag Dem Thrones moment of, like, just acknowledging... without really acknowledging, because they can't actually introduce the idea of race in the show at this moment.
Yeah.
But the show has gotten more woke and aware and understands that, like, it's racist. Like, the North is racist against Missandei and Grey Worm. And, like, they just have these moments of, like,
That was such an interesting moment to introduce that whole idea that, like, the North or maybe the entirety of Westeros is a bunch of racist bastards, including the children.
Yeah.
It was a little weird.
It's unsurprising.
Yeah, let's go home. But we're all so... trained by watching so many movies and TV shows. The classic example is the cop says, oh, in a week I retire.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to die. And I think they know that we've been all trained to see that. And so I don't know if that, like, dialogue, we're going to go look at a beach again. I think it was, again, like, Missandei and Grey Worm are in love. They've achieved that. They've had that emotional thing. Grey Worm has found love, if not actual intercourse. So they're ready to die. They're all ready to die. Not ready emotionally, but their stories have been completed.
But to your point, if there's going to be three more episodes after the battle next week,
they can't all die.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, Tyrion's story definitely hasn't been completed.
Yeah.
And like Daenerys and Sansa and Jon and Bran. Like, and I think all those guys.
Yeah. They did make sure to let us know, too, that Yara is sort of... ready to accept them at the Iron Islands should they need to retreat from the battle next week.
My argument is not that they're all going to die. My argument is that the showrunners did a very good job of taking away all of the tools that we as analytical, predictive watchers might use to guess who's going to die. In exactly the way I was saying Jorah needs a redemptive death or the Hound needs a redemptive death. That's no longer... Sure, he does, but so does everybody.
But it could be next episode.
It could be next episode. He could survive. They're keeping us from playing that game, and I respect that.
Can the Ice Dragon put out fire by just breathing whatever he's breathing on it?
That's a really good question.
Because if the big part of their plan is just motes of fire and fire everywhere.
Yeah.
And then they have just sort of like an anti-fire.
There are going to be two big surprises in the battle scene. One is going to be the appearance of the fire dragons, and the other is going to be the appearance of the ice dragons. And I can't predict which will come first, which will be more shocking, and what's going to happen. But those they're keeping in up their sleeve.
So, do you guys think the Night King is a Targaryen?
Ooh,
he's a Stark.
No, didn't we find out that the Night King was a First Man when that scene with the
Children of the Forest make him into a White Walker,
and that was long before the rise. Certainly, the Targaryens and even the Starks. That was long, long ago. So I don't think so.
By putting dragonglass in his heart, which is also how they kept Benjen Stark alive. I have a lot of feelings about Benjen Stark, but we don't have to go there again.
We've talked about how boring it is after this incredibly complex show about human beings and their capacity for good and evil for the final fight to come down against pure evil. In fact, I think, Tricia, that's part of your whole, well, what does the Night King want? What's his purpose? It seems boring if he's just evil. But they say that overtly. What is it? It's death. That's who we're fighting. We're fighting death itself. And it also made me think of, again, the Battle of Helm's Deep. What do the orcs want? The orcs are just death. They're just death. The Zulu, what do the Zulus want? They're just death. It becomes a drama not about two opposing sides, each with their motivations, some of which you can sympathize. It's about human beings facing death imminently and what drama arises from that. And it turns out there's a fair bit.
Yeah.
I know.
I won't be actually bored, but I will be disappointed
okay.
if there's not some more. I mean, because we've been given to what we were just talking about, some backstory. The Children of the Forest created the White Walkers. It was like an accidental bioterrorism event
right.
that they created them in the first place.
Yeah.
And I guess we're just meant to believe that the Children of the Forest are gone and that there's no way to figure out how to defeat them or right. like.
Yeah.
But it also, to have it end with just, well, either we kill all of them or they kill all of us.
Yeah.
In every other war, eventually, people have to talk again.
Well, wait
and
a
Game
minute.
Of Thrones is about talking.
I'm going to ask you a question. So a couple seasons ago, we had the Battle of the Bastards, which was the good guys versus the really bad guy. Did you feel the same? Like, we were like, well, Ramsay, he has feelings. He has desires. We should respect those. No, you were like, Ramsay, what an awful person. Kill him, kill him, kill him.
Oh, I'm all for killing them.
Yeah, no, it's not but about it's, respecting their feelings and desires, is it? As much as it's about knowing that the bad guy is more interesting than just a one-dimensional, like,
a one-dimensional evil.
Machine.
And also that everyone fighting for them has no agency at all, has no, like, you know, the right. Tarleys could have bent the knee or not. That was
right.
interesting. That created dramatic tension.
Right.
Because they're fighting on behalf of an idea, and so they can choose to continue doing that or not at any
right.
point. But if it's just evil versus good,
right.
then the only way to end it is for them to literally destroy all the whites or all the White Walkers so the whites fall back down,
right.
which is less interesting to me than having to negotiate a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
totally.
Although they didn't really negotiate a solution to the Battle of the Bastards.
No, but then the Karstarks are back in Winterfell.
Yeah. I think I see your point, but I guess what I'm coming around to, and I've agreed with you, that the great thing about George R. R. Martin.
Quiet, because Peter Sagal's got another goddamn opinion.
I've agreed to you in the past that the great thing about George R. R. Martin is his advance on Tolkien was that there is no, like, exterior embodied evil. Evil is present in human beings.
Right, it's not just the big bad.
It's not just the big bad.
But here we are.
But here we are. But now I've come around to seeing that kind of story in the examples I've mentioned now a couple times, has its place and can be valuable.
Yeah, and that fighting death is something we all must do.
Right. All men must die, to quote a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to that end, like, is fighting death something we must do, or should we just accept death because we're all men must die?
Yeah. I mean, in a weird way, it gets philosophical. Like, what is death? And, I mean,
and what is memory and story?
Especially considering the reanimation of the pig brains that scientists
yes.
I know.
Like, what is death? All right, different
week.
Podcast. Okay.
In TV shows,
now
death.
That recaps pig brain science with Peter Sagal.
In TV shows and movies, death tends to be a form of justice. Death tends to be a good ending for some people and a bad ending for others. In reality, it's an ending that we all face, and what we're in this interesting situation is we're not looking for justice, like, or trial by combat, to use
right.
another concept from this very
show.
Clegane
Bowl, I don't think.
No, not going to happen. It's about these characters facing something that doesn't have anything to do with justice or what they deserve or what they don't deserve, but it's coming for them anyway. And I've come around, it's been a long trip, but I've come around to the point that this is actually becoming a satisfying way to end this saga. We've talked about whether the Game of Thrones runners are going to give us a happy ending or not.
I think not.
Well, they just gave us a happy ending for almost everybody we care about in this show. Like I said earlier.
Yeah,
everybody got
they've
their
lived
resolution.
Longer than many of them thought
yes.
they would.
And Brienne got what she wanted,
and
Jorah got what he wanted.
Okay.
And even Samwell, his moment of being embraced by his brothers, you mm-hmm. know, the two left. They all got their happy endings. And the show's not over.
What
which
if
is,
we
I think.
It? What if we were just like, this was the last podcast episode? Because we were like, this was so great.
We're just
everything
not going to watch
ended
next
so beautifully.
Week.
Yeah,
let's
I mean,
just call it while it's still good.
There are movies one I can think of. There are others. There are movies like Limbo, a John Sayles movie, which leaves the actual ending of the plot up in the air.
Huh.
Limbo ends with this plane arriving. You don't know if they're going to be rescued or killed, the principal characters. But what you do know is that the principal characters have had a journey together and they've reached some kind of resolution and a peace
yeah.
with each other. Their conflicts have been resolved. They understand each other. And the implication is almost, well, they might live, they might die, depending on who's in that plane, but it doesn't matter. So in a weird way, if this were the last episode of Game of Thrones, it would be insanely frustrating, but also kind of cool.
Right?
You know? Because in the end, what matters in a weird, you know, what matters, you know, the real Game of Thrones were the friends we made along the way. and I almost mean that. Like
I love it.
Yeah, like it, Brienne finally got such a wonderful ending with her smiling and her almost weeping with happiness that you're like, what happens to her now almost doesn't matter in a weird way.
Yeah. Everybody quiet, because Peter Sagal's got
another goddamn opinion. But Cersei gotta die.
Cersei, yeah, well, sir, we forgot about her.
We need a little coda that's just, and who kills Cersei? And then I'd be fine. Yeah. And then I want three episodes where we're just from the POV, point of view, of the White Walker army. And I want to see what kind of soup they're eating. I want to see whether or not they eat the crusty bread.
I don't think they have soup and crusty bread. Okay,
so if you want to weigh in, you can leave us a voice memo and email it to us at nerdatrecaps@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us and use the hashtag nerdatrecaps. We have a super sweet newsletter. You can actually sign up for it on our Facebook page. The show is produced by us with help from Justin Bull. Our executive producer is Brendan Banizak. And many thanks, of course, to Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music for making our awesome theme song.
Oh, we'll watch next week.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, obviously, I'm going to watch next week.
Yes.
My God.
We're not going to.
I don't want Davos to die. That's the one that I think is going to be the hardest.
That's going to be tough.
I'm going to be really sad if Brienne dies, even though she's a nightmare.
We're going to be sad if anybody we spent time with last night dies.
But anybody who's just going out to fight the whites, I think, is a goner. I think if you get to ride a dragon, maybe you're fine. And if you get to stay in the
crypt.
The crypt. The safest place in all of Westeros.
Doom.
An army of the undead is coming. Where should we go? Let's go hang out with the dead.
The dead.
The crypt is
honest
the safest
God,
place.
God, guys, wake up. How quickly in the episode do you think they're going to figure it? Will they figure out that this was a bad idea to send people to the crypt before the dead start rising?
Should that be our thing we put money on this week? How long it'll take for shit to go down in the crypt?
And then a bunch of white women and children, like the white women and
they get
children,
killed.
They come running out too because if they die, they immediately then become whites also.
That's a real problem for the people fighting.
Nice. So then like zombie Gilly basically.
Oh, don't even. Zombie little Sam.
Zombie little Sam.
I am stressed out.
Oh, God.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.